with us, preparing us to hear God's word today. We are continuing our preaching series on the life of David, a hero of faith from the Old Testament. And today we're looking at 2 Samuel chapter 11 for a message entitled, A Hero's Fall. Story is told of a lady who was speeding and had an officer pull her over to the side of the road. She didn't have her seatbelt on, so as soon as she stopped, she quickly slipped it on before the officer got to her window. After talking to her about speeding, the officer said, "I see you're wearing your seatbelt. Do you believe in wearing it at all times?" "Yes, I do, officer," she replied with confidence. "Well," asked the officer, "do you always do it up with it looped through your steering wheel?" The lady had been caught. Have you ever been caught? Pastor Rita was getting at that today in her children's story. Today we're going to look at David and we're going to see how David got caught. He got caught up in his own sin, and let's face it, friends, we seem to have a morbid curiosity of seeing our heroes fall to sin. Leaders who achieve success and then are brought to their knees make for lead stories on the evening news. And I can mention the names and you can give me the scandal or the sin that caused their fall. Richard Nixon, Jim Baker, Bill Clinton, probably thinking of Watergate, PTL, Monica Lewinsky. But heroes have been falling hard long before pastors and presidents. The greatest heroes in the Old Testament fell hard. Think of Noah. Noah got drunk and shamed his family after getting off the ark. And Abraham, he lied about his wife, Sarah, saying that she was his sister. And Jacob stole his brother's birthright. The great heroes of the faith of the Old Testament all seem to have these moments where they failed God and they fell hard. But perhaps no one more so than David. Today we're in 2 Samuel chapter 11, a chapter where David commits one sin after another. Up to now, David's been very exemplary. He's been a strong leader. He's been courageous. He's been devout. He's been tied to God. He's been following God faithfully. But that all changes as he strolls the palace roof. His focus moves from God to himself, and he falls hard. What do we learn from our hero's fall? Let's consider 2 Samuel chapter 11 for a message entitled, A Hero's Fall. Hear now the word of God. In the spring, at the time when kings go off to war, David sent Joab out with king's men and the whole Israelite army. They destroyed the Ammonites and besieged Raba, but David remained in Jerusalem. One evening, David got up from his bed and walked around on the roof of the palace. And from the palace, he saw a woman bathing. The woman was very beautiful, and David sent someone to find out about her. The man said, "She is Bathsheba, the daughter of Eliam and the wife of Uriah the Hittite." Then David sent messengers to get her. She came to him, and he slept with her. Then she went back home. The woman conceived and sent word to David, saying, "I am pregnant." So David sent this word to Joab, "Send me Uriah the Hittite." And Joab sent him to David. When Uriah came to him, David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. Then David said to Uriah, "Go down to your house and wash your feet." So Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. But Uriah slept at the entrance to the palace with all his master's servants, did not go down to his house. David was told Uriah did not go home, so he asked Uriah, "Haven't you just come from a military campaign? Why didn't you go home?" Uriah said to David, "The ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my commander Joab and my lord's men are camped in the open country. How could I go to my house and eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing." Then David said to him, "Stay here one more day, and tomorrow I will send you back." So Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. At David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servants. He did not go home. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In it, he wrote, "Put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest. Then withdraw from him so that he will be struck down and die." So while Joab had the city under siege, he put Uriah at a place where he knew the strongest defenders were. When the men of the city came out and fought against Joab, some of the men in David's army fell. Moreover, Uriah the Hittite died. Joab sent David a full account of the battle. He instructed the messenger, "When you have finished giving the king this account of the battle, the king's anger may flare up, and he may ask you, 'Why did you get so close to the city to fight? Didn't you know that they would shoot arrows from the wall? Who killed Abimelech, son of Jerubbaal? Didn't a woman drop an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died in Thebez? Why did you get so close to the wall?' If he asks you this, then say to him, 'Moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead.'" The messenger set out, and when he arrived, he told David everything Joab had sent to him. The messenger said to David, "The men overpowered us and came out against us in the open, but we drove them back to the entrance of the city gate. Then the archers shot arrows at your servants from the wall, and some of the king's men died. Moreover, your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead." David told the messenger, "Say this to Joab, 'Don't let this upset you. The sword devours one as well as another. Press the attack against the city and destroy this.' Say this to encourage Joab." When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. After the time of mourning was over, David had her brought to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing David had done displeased the Lord. Here ends the reading of God's holy word. Verse 1 tells us that it was in the spring of the year that the kings would go off to war, and specifically, it was directly after the grain harvest in April and May. And verse 1 says, "The Israelites destroyed the Ammonites. From this time on, they were subject to Israel." And so the time for war has come, and the army has gone off, but David doesn't go. He remains back in the palace. He abandoned his purpose to stay home from the war. The first point from our text today is this: we fall when we pursue sin. We fall when we pursue sin. And David was strolling on the roof of the palace, and as he's looking out over the city, he sees Bathsheba. But he doesn't just see Bathsheba as she's bathing. He ogles her. He lusts after her. He begins to pursue sin. Verses 3 and 4 says, David sent someone to find out about her. Obviously, he saw her and was pleased by her, and so he wanted more information. Find out about her. And when he learns that she is the wife of Uriah the Hittite, it doesn't seem to matter to David. He sends for her. And the messengers go and get her, and she comes to him, and because he's the king, he takes advantage of her and sleeps with her. Notice the pursuit of sin. David finds out who she is. He sends for her, and then he completes the sin. What was the first sin of David? I think it was lust. He saw Bathsheba, but he didn't just see her. He lusted for her. And that sin led to another sin, and it led to another sin. And that's what happens. One sin will lead to another. David didn't need to walk the palace roof that night. He didn't need to gaze upon Bathsheba. He didn't have to ask for her to be sent. He didn't have to sleep with her. But he did. And the word comes back to David from Bathsheba, "I am pregnant." What happens when you pursue sin? One sin leads to another. It leads to another. Next month will mark the 51st anniversary. 51 years ago next month, Richard Nixon resigned as president of the United States. For 2 years, he had been denying any involvement in Watergate. But finally, the truth was coming out, and he faced certain impeachment. And so he resigned. You know, I think the greater sin for Nixon was not the break-in itself, but it was rather the cover-up. was the fact that he wouldn't say, I was wrong. I should not have done that. And that leads to our next point today. Pursuing sin leads to greater sins. Here is King David, the shepherd boy, the giant killer, the greatest king and greatest warrior, a man after God's own heart. And he falls into sin. And instead of saying, boy, did I blow this? Did I really blow this? Instead of saying that, what does he do? He begins plotting and planning and scheming. Send me Uriah the Hittite. And he has him brought in. He says, you know, why don't you go home and spend some time with your wife? And Uriah is faithful to his charge and will not do so. David brings him back the next day and gets him drunk, thinking, well, now he'll go home to his wife. But even then, he doesn't go. Faithful to his charge. And so David has to come up with plan C. Well, this is what I'll do. I'll send him back to the battlefront. I'll send a word to Joab, and he can put him in the front where he will be vulnerable to being injured or even worse. Here is David. He's sending for people. He's scheming. He's doing all these things to cover up his sin. Our hero is falling, and he's falling hard. When we pursue sin, we too fall hard. And that leads to our next point. Here is Uriah. He's out there and he's doing his job. He's in battle. And of course, he ends up losing his life. And the word comes back to David. This is how the battle is going. This is what has happened. And, you know, we've lost men. And by the way, Uriah the Hittite has been lost. He has died. Finally, David's plan worked. He plotted Uriah's death. And Uriah was indeed dead. Killed. And the point is this, pursuing sin brings out the worst in us. And doesn't the sin in this chapter bring out the worst in David? Aren't we more pleased with the shepherding David, the songwriter David, the courageous warrior David, rather than the scheming and the sending and the deceitful David we see in this story? Word comes that Uriah has died in battle. I love David's response in verse 25. He told the messenger, say this to Joab, don't let this upset you. The sword devours one as well as another. Press the attack against the city and destroy it. His response seems so flippant. So it doesn't really matter. You know, the sword falls on whoever it will. He's just grateful that Uriah is no longer in the scene. And now with Uriah's death, David shows no grief at all. Bathsheba, meanwhile, mourns for her husband, and after 7 days, she is brought to become the wife of David. Verse 27 tells us that after that time of mourning, David brought Bathsheba to his house. She became his wife, and she bore him a son. But the thing David had done had displeased the Lord. The last point we want to make today is this. Pursuing sin grieves the heart of God. You know, we've read a number of passages about David in this preaching series, and many times we've read phrases like, and the Lord was with David, or the Lord's Spirit was upon David, or the Lord had strengthened David for this or that. But you know, God is not mentioned in this chapter until the very end, until the very last verse. And the very last statement in the chapter is a very haunting statement. And it says, the thing David had done displeased the Lord. The thing David had done displeased the Lord. David had violated God's law. He had abused his power and no doubt grieved the heart of God. He'd broken multiple commandments in one chapter of Scripture. He had broken multiple commandments. Friends, we need to realize that sin, whether it's a simple white lie to murder, adultery, stealing, you pick your sin, it all grieves the heart of God. And God's heart grieves not just for David, but for you and me. Why? Because we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. But Romans 5:8 tells us that God demonstrates his own love for us in this: while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. You see, friends, Jesus died for the Davids of this world, the ones who fall hard, but he's also died for us. And you might think, you know, I'm not like David. I'm not out there committing adultery. I'm not out there plotting people's death. That's not me. But we're all sinners, for all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. The picture of David in 2 Samuel 11 is disturbing. I like the way Max Lucado, in Facing Your Giants, describes David in this story. He says, "We don't like this sending, demanding David. We prefer the pastoring David, caring for the flock, the dashing David, hiding from Saul, the worshiping David, writing psalms. We aren't prepared for the David who has lost control of his self-control, who sins as he sins. What has happened to him? The pinnacle of success has dulled his ears and blinded his eyes. Did David see Bathsheba? No. He saw Bathsheba bathing. He saw her body in curves. He saw Bathsheba the conquest. But did he see Bathsheba, the human being, the wife of Uriah, the daughter of Israel, the creation of God? No. His arrogance and his pride overwhelmed him, and he fell. He fell hard." Max adds, "The story of David and Bathsheba is less a story of lust and more a story of power." And we know from Proverbs chapter 16 that pride goeth before a fall, and it certainly did for David. But the last final words of that chapter are so troubling. "But the thing David had done displeased the Lord." You know, friends, if we were honest today, we would have to say we've all been caught. We've all been caught, we've all fallen. And you may think, yeah, I'm not like David, but we've all sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And you might be thinking, well, you know, still, I'm not like David. The worst thing I've done is stolen a paperclip from my third grade teacher, or, you know, I scraped the peas off my plate and told my parents that the dog ate them, you know. No, we've all sinned. We've all fallen short. And God is just as displeased. So friends, take a closer look this morning. Perhaps you really have some skeletons in your closet that you're hiding. Perhaps what you're calling stretching the truth is really lying. Or maybe what you call a bad temper is really anger and hate. Or what you call sharing a prayer request is really gossip. Or maybe what you call admiring the opposite sex is really lust. Or what you call a demand for justice is really a matter of bitterness. It's time to end your silence. Your joy has left. You're in over your head. It's time to get beyond your fall. Failure does not have to be the end of the story. God has been offended, but amazingly, God so much wants to forgive. So confess and get the joy back again. Don't let failure be the end of your story. Don't let sin be the end of your story. 1 John chapter 2, verse 1 says this: "My dear children, I write this to you so that you will not sin. But if anyone does sin, we have one who speaks to us in our defense, Jesus Christ, the righteous one." Today, as we've seen David at his worst, sin overwhelming his life, And if we were honest, we can all say, "But by the grace of God goes me." When Jesus instituted the bread and the cup, those powerful reminders of what death means, he was reminding us, "Your fall is not fatal. I will take the punishment for your sin. And I will make a way to the Father for you, a way through the cross and his shed blood and his broken body." As we prepare to come to the Lord's table as we conclude our service today, I want you to reflect on reasons for thanksgiving and faith, penitence, and love. In a time of silence, I want you to remember Christ, who called us to break bread with one another, and thoughtfully examine the state of your faithfulness in your unity with the body. Let us pause for a moment of silent prayer as we prepare to come to the table of the Lord.